Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Katie Balls and this is the Sunday Roundup. The leading charity Oxfam has become embroiled in a scandal concerning members of its staff allegedly using the services of prostitutes while delivering humanitarian assistance to the earthquake-stricken Haiti. Oxfam says that it is dismayed at what has taken place. The International Development Secretary, Penny Mordaunt, joined Andrew Marr to discuss the impact of the revelations.
Can I ask you, first of all, when you came across this story, first?
When the Times picked up the story.
So you picked up the Times and that was the first you knew of it. What was your reaction?
Well, I think it's a complete betrayal of both the people that Oxfam were there to help and also the people that sent them there to do that job. It's a scandal.
In terms of your department, back when all of this happened in 2011, what were you told as a department by Oxfam?
We were not told about the nature of these events. They initially said that they were investigating misconduct, and when they concluded that report, they did not tell us the nature of these events. They did tell the Charity Commission that there was sexual inappropriate behaviour, bullying and harassment of employees, but they did not report that to us.
Given that you knew there was a problem, was that not, at the very least, a little incurious of your department not to ask more?
No, because in addition to that, Oxfam also gave us reassurances of the two things that are critical to us. It's about, if you just let me finish,
sorry.
It's about, was there any harm done? Was there any involvement of the beneficiaries of aid involved? Was there any impact on them? And they told us categorically no. And they also told us there
was a lie, wasn't it?
Well, quite. And they also told us that there was no misappropriation of funds, because obviously that is the other thing that we would have been concerned with.
Beginning to look like a cover-up, and it's certainly clear that they lied to you. You feel they lied to you. They get quite a lot of public money from you. Is there any part of you that's beginning to think maybe we shouldn't be paying taxpayers' money to this organisation?
Yes, I do think that.
You do?
I think that I'm going to afford them the opportunity to talk to me tomorrow, but I'm very clear, it doesn't matter whether you've got a whistleblowing hotline, it doesn't matter if you've got good safeguarding practices in place. If the moral leadership at the top of the organisation isn't there, then we cannot have you as a partner. I would also just note that there are enormous numbers of people who are doing good work, and they're good people working for Oxfam, and they have been betrayed in this as well.
Prominent backbencher and vocal Remain supporter Anna Soubry also joined Marr to fire a warning shot across the Prime Minister's bow. Appearing alongside Labour's Chuka Amunna, Soubry told Marr that Theresa May should re-evaluate the type of Brexit deal she wants to negotiate.
Your joint determination is that Parliament will have a clear, decisive vote on whatever terms Theresa May reveals to the country in due course.
Yes, and all options must be available to Parliament as well. And the real thing is this. If this government doesn't get this right, it will end up in a position whereby the majority of members of Parliament, putting their constituents first, will find themselves unable to vote for a withdrawal agreement, and then the government will
There are options, and that's our point.
That's the point.
What are the options? Because people say to me again and again, if Parliament votes down whatever deal Theresa May gets, then that is leaving the EU. Because we triggered Article 50, we leave without a deal.
We secured a meaningful vote before Christmas. Dominic Grieve tabled the amendment. There was a majority in Parliament for it. And what it ensures is that Parliament doesn't just give the government a blank cheque, but we get to actually have a voice and influence all the different scenarios.
And when we went over to Europe, one of the big messages, and we saw lots and lots of disparate people, one of the big messages was that if we don't take a withdrawal agreement, there are other options. That's not just staying in the European Union, it's also the Norwegian model. And the big mistake that's being made is that the debate in Cabinet is between Canada and Canada +++, when it's obvious...
So Norway's gone.
Exactly, and that's a huge mistake, because from the European point of view, it's a choice between Norway and Canada, and we've made a mistake with these red lines.
Theresa May has made it clear that she's going to come out with her clear preferred option for how we leave the EU later this month. We're going to see it. What could she say that would calm you both down?
Oh, from my point of view, I want to see EFTA. That is what I want to see.
But that's not going to happen, is it? The Cabinet are never going to agree that, are they?
Well, if they don't, as Chuka says, not only is it bad for our economy, but it also fundamentally undermines the peace process.
Mm. Is it conceivable that you can get a majority? Do you really believe you have a majority in the House of Commons on the Tory side and the Labour side coming together to defeat the kind of Brexit the Prime Minister wants?
If she's not careful, yes. But there's already a big shift.
That smashes the party system.
But, well, it may well do. But there is a real shift amongst what I call leaverlights, reluctant remainers, who are seeing the attraction of EFTA.
Shadow Chancellor John McDonnell has also given his verdict on the best way to settle Brexit. McDonnell told Robert Peston about why he did not favour a second referendum.
What we need to do now, and this is a tougher politics now on Brexit,
yeah.
If we are, and this is our ambition, and I think it's the right ambition,
yeah.
If it is about healing the wounds of Brexit, bringing people together, that's a tougher politics than just plumping for one issue.
Nobody's saying you should be a single-issue party.
Well, what I'm saying is that it is a tougher politics if you're trying to build consensus,
sure.
And it is a slower politics to build up that consensus. But I think we're doing it because we think it's the right thing for the country, not just the right thing for our party.
And I was struck that when Jeremy Corbyn was sitting in that seat, he said he was, at the moment, against the British people having a second vote. Mm. But he absolutely refused to say that there might not come... He refused to say that he was ruling out a second vote forever.
Yeah, because we're worried that if you did go for example, like Alistair and others have said, look, why don't we have a second referendum? It divides the country again, and those divisions are really still there.
I think, saying the same as Jeremy, that right now you don't think it's the right thing, but you're not saying there might not be circumstances in which a second referendum...
We'd never turn our back on democratic engagement, but our worry at the moment is if you had another referendum, it would divide the country again, and at the same time, we would open up the potential of that sort of right-wing xenophobia, part of which we saw...
But what happens if in the autumn, when Parliament gets this meaningful vote, that Parliament says that Theresa May's deal is not the deal that Parliament wants? In those circumstances, surely there would have to be a referendum.
Well, I think better we have a general election. Better we have a general election. On the issue and all the other issues, because you then have a wider debate as well.
But it's interesting that you're saying better not ruling out a referendum.
Well, I think the better route is through a general election.
The newly elected president of Sinn Féin has spoken to Sky's David Blevins about the future of power sharing in Northern Ireland. Mary Lee McDonald, who replaces Gerry Adams after 35 years in the post, indicated that there may be a ray of hope for Stormont yet.
Given what's going on around the border over Brexit, the fact that there is no power sharing in Northern Ireland, you've talked about the past repeating itself. Do you have a concern that that could happen?
No, I don't see us returning to the circumstances that fed such a long, protracted and deep conflict. No, I don't. However, I am aware that on the ground in the north, over the last year or so, there has been a level of polarisation that I regard as very dangerous. That's why I very much hope that we get the institutions back up and running. The issues are clear. The issues are resolvable. There's nothing insurmountable in my view. But if I'm truthful, they're only sustainable in the long term when some people step into the light of the year 2018.
When you say some people, you mean Arlene Foster? And when you say the light, what exactly do you mean?
Well, I mean, quite bluntly, that it is not a sustainable position to argue that citizens can have marriage equality in the southern jurisdiction in Ireland and in England, in Wales, in Scotland, and somehow the north of Ireland remains, you know, cut off from this. And citizens living in the north of Ireland are denied that basic right. That's what I mean, to be blunt.
Is there going to be an agreement there? Is Arlene Foster a woman you can do business with?
I hope there will be an agreement. And yes, I think we can do business with Arlene Foster.
And finally, Henry Bolton, the embattled leader of UKIP, who's trying to convince his party membership to maintain him as leader, has confessed that he still has strong feelings for the model Jo Marnie. Marnie hit the headlines last month after it was revealed that she sent a string of racist text messages about Prince Harry's fiancée, Meghan Markle. Bolton insisted to Andrew Marr that his feelings for Marnie were not the most important issue facing UKIP at the moment.
Are you still in love with her?
There are strong affections there, yes.
Because what your party want to hear is that this relationship is over, and you can't tell them that, can you?
Well, that's not what the party have said at all. The NEC held a vote of no confidence. There are a range of reasons given for that. The general consensus was that there was a problem with my judgment around that whole episode. But the point is that actually we are off, and we have been for a very long time, off the field in terms of the debate on leaving the European Union. What we should be doing is shaping the future of this country's independence. And that's what we should be focusing on, not whether or not somebody way before I met them actually sent private messages that actually had nothing to do with me and I had no means of knowing
about
them.
But very extreme messages. And you're still in touch, aren't you? You were seen with her on Tuesday. So this is a relationship which is live.
Yeah, but that's not the point, Andrew. The point is that I'm the leader of a political party that brought about the referendum that was partly instrumental in bringing about the result. Mm. We have a responsibility to the British people to project politics into the debate to shape the future of this country. And that's what I'm 110% focused upon.
I'm pushing this and I'm asking you, because not because I'm prurient, but because your party are really concerned about it. You said the relationship was on hold. It's no longer on hold, is it?
Well, if you'll excuse me, Andrew, I think actually that what the party's concerned about is unifying and projecting its politics. For a very long time now, for way beyond before I became leader, all of the members have known that internal communications, the finances, the organisation of the party needed an overhaul. And that's what I'm engaged
with. Members a month, I think you said recently.
Well, hundreds, yes. And indeed, that's been going on for the best part of a year, from way before I was elected leader. And it's those things that need to be turned around. So the priority for me has been to organise the party, and it doesn't happen overnight.
That's all for this week. I'm Katie Balls, and this podcast was produced by Matthew Taylor. Don't forget to subscribe to the Coffee House Shots podcast on the iTunes store. And you can get a great deal in the magazine too, with 12 issues for just £12, along with a free limited edition Spectator Moleskine notebook, worth a lot of money. Just visit spectator.co.uk/podoffer. And if you enjoyed this podcast, do also subscribe to our daily evening blend email. It's a free roundup of all the political news each day, along with analysis and a diary of what to expect next. Just go to spectator.co.uk/evening blend. Thanks for listening, and join us again next week.